Yes, well, a big thank you to Conor Bean for kicking off the week in entertaining fashion. It is Monday, the 26th of June, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, all roads lead to Croker for some mouth-watering quarterfinals after Mayo end Galway's summer.
Colin Brief about to dispatch the kick out, and that is it. The game is over at Pearce Stadium. Mayo have come to Salt Hill and they've knocked Galway, last year's beaten finalists, out of the championship, coming from behind. They were out of it at half time. They trailed by 8-3, but David McBrien's goal brought them back into the game, and they withstood everything that Galway had to throw at them in the frantic closing stages. And it is the maroon and white supporters who are finished now in involvement in this year's championship. The green and red go on to the quarterfinal.
We'll have more on that with Neil Ewing shortly. Plus, in soccer, Alan Cawley and Antonio Donoghue will discuss the latest chapter in Robbie Keane's unpredictable career. While in golf, Stephanie Meadow tells us how perseverance drove her to a top three finish in a major.
1 month ago, I was, you know, crying to my husband about what, you know, how am I going to get better, or what am I doing, you know, what am I doing with my life, sort of thing. But that's just sport, right? Like, that's how hard it is, and that's how much we care. Like, it'll destroy you in a second if you let it. And there are those moments where it's tough for everybody. But, you know, perseverance, you just got to keep going and never give up.
Just got to keep going. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet us at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Shane Dawson, how are you?
I'm very well. Ruby Walsh, how are you?
Had you a good weekend?
I had a lovely weekend. Stuck in work, unfortunately. Missed out. Was meant to partake in the Tolka Park Pride Five-a-Side. Shelburne put on a competition on Sunday. Unfortunately missed that. Unfortunately missed a weekend of sport. However, working on it, I got to see a lot of Gaelic games, which is a good thing. And I can't complain, because there were some cracking matches in that. Yourself, you were...
I helped you get over Friday night, did
it? Yeah, I didn't want to bring that up. Alan Cawley here has a right grin on his face, so he does, but less said about
evening
that.
Evening, Shane. Evening, Ruby.
Yeah, how are you, Al?
Yeah. I'm good. I had a good weekend myself.
Did you?
Good. Started off in Daly Mount on Friday night, absolute cracker.
Yeah.
I was at a gig Saturday night, and I watched Galway and Mayo yesterday. No, a local gig down home in Sligo. We won't say any more, Shane.
I thought he was at Glastonbury, did you?
I watched that last night as well, unbelievable.
Elton
was unreal.
I do want to get on to Ruby at Ascot, but one thing I will say, I enjoyed a tweet of say what you will about Elton John, but I can't imagine any other current or former Premier League chairman pulling this one off.
Very good.
Ruby, you were at Ascot not only over the weekend but for a couple of days before. How was that?
I was there until Saturday. Yeah, it was great. It was great racing. It was some great racing, obviously. It was not teamed around Frankie Dettori's last Ascot, but he did bow out of there on Saturday evening. And it was great racing, great spread of winners as well, Shane. Dawn Rising brought the curtain down for Joseph O'Brien and Ryan Moore, and Ryan was leading rider there, and he is just an incredible jockey to watch. He's just unbelievable. But there was a huge spread of winners. I mean, Snellen won the Chesham Stakes on the first race on Saturday for Gary Carroll and Gavin Cromwell. Not two names you wouldn't associate with Royal Ascot, but look, it was a huge spread. Tahira won the Coronation Stakes on Friday for Dermot Weld and Chris Hayes, and you had Shaquille standing upright in the stalls in the Commonwealth Cup, and in the sprint to give away the ground the way that Shaquille gave away, and then the ride that Oisin Murphy gave him, that was magic on Friday. Thursday, of course, was all about Frankie Dettori in the Gold Cup winning on Courage Mon Ami, and he also had a Royal winner which the British loved in Desert Hero. So, you know, that was a great day to be there to watch it all, the pomp and ceremony and everything that went with it. You had Mostadaf in the Coronation Stakes on Wednesday. So look, there was a huge amount of winners and a great spread of them, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Plenty of highlights. It would be rude of me to ask you to pick one, would it?
Todd Paddington was really good last Tuesday in the St. James's Palace. I thought he was really good, and I thought for a 4-year-old, for the horse that Frankie won the Gold Cup on, Courage Mon Ami, only the fourth run of his life, to step up to that level, there could be a couple of Gold Cups in him.
Okay, good stuff. Ruby, you did ask me about Friday, and you know, the good thing about having Monday night League of Ireland fixtures, Ruby, Alan, and indeed Tony O'Donoghue, who's on the line as well, is that we don't even have to review Friday. We can just gloss over the fact that Pats beat Shells 1-0 and everything besides. But one thing I will probably segue into Tony at Tallaght Stadium for Shamrock Rovers against Derry City, Tony, is the fact that Rovers did drop a couple of points in their Dublin derby against Bowes on Friday, so they'll be looking for a big response this evening.
Yeah, the fact that they went two goals up is a surprise, that they could only exit Dalymount Park with a point, because you would have thought, you know, the three in a row champions going for four in a row, they go two goals up early in the second half, they look like they're controlling the game, and then this strange lapse. And, you know, in the end, I think Bohemians would probably feel hard done by that they didn't win the match. So, you know, Stephen Bradley is saying, no, we were good. And remember early in the season as well, he's very calm, he doesn't wobble. There was an opportunity perhaps for someone else to take up the slack. Remember, Bohemians started very well. Remember also that Derry were leading this league as well at one stage, but Shamrock Rovers got themselves back into a groove, probably because Stephen Bradley's been so calm. But I think his calmness on Friday night was maybe, you know, papering over the cracks a little bit. So tonight will be a really, really interesting observation of the strength of their squad and their strength of recovery. It's first against second, of course. Derry took all 3 points on Friday against my beloved Cork City up in the Brandywell. But if Derry, as they did last March, can leave Tallaght tonight with the 3 points, well, the title race is very much back on, isn't it?
Yeah, but Alan, I know Tony said Derry got the points against Cork on Friday night, but before that, drew at Bowes, lost at Pats, drew at Shells. There was a bit of a wobble there for Derry.
Yeah, it's just the inconsistency of it, Ruby, and particularly the home form is very, very poor this season, and we all know kind of there's factors behind that in terms of the pitch. There's been a lot of injuries for Derry City as well, but they did win at home on Friday night, as Tony said, against Cork, and that gives them good momentum coming into the game tonight. The question, like what you're asking, Ruby, just in terms of the form leading into this, and that would be the worry I would have in terms of them really putting it up to Shamrock Rovers this season, is can you see them going on an 8, 9, 10 game run like what we saw with Shamrock Rovers? I can't really see it, to be honest with you, from the evidence we've seen so far. Whereas with Shamrock Rovers, despite the odd little blip throughout the season, they're capable of winning 6, 7, 8, just reeling them off like that. And even if you look at the league table already, and Shamrock Rovers had the slowest start, then they went on the brilliant run, they've had their couple of blips, and here they are yet sitting comfortable 4 points clear, and if they win tonight they go 7 points. And when you think,
would you not have called Friday a blip as well though, Alan?
Oh, 100%, Tony, yeah, and obviously we were in there. I would agree with your summary there of the game. Once they went 2-0 up, I thought they'd go on and just cruise to victory. But Bohemians, to be fair, played very well on the night, and I think the least that they deserved was the point, if not all three. So even though Shamrock Rovers were 2-0 up, I don't think they deserved to win the match. But it's been like that for them. It almost looks like they're in second, third gear, and yet they're still comfortable 4 points clear. So I think tonight is a bigger night for Derry than it is Shamrock Rovers, because I think they need to have to stand up now. And as Tony said, the one in March, and that was a great win in Tallaght, I think they need to go and make a bit of a statement win tonight and just show everyone that there is a title race on.
Do you know that phrase "statement win" was bandied around a lot in March, when, you know, that was the end of a 7-year itch, you might say, for Derry to come here to the Brandywell or to Tallaght. And I'm in the car park again, by the way, and it's a glorious evening. I don't know if there's any tickets left for this, but it's a beautiful evening to watch the top two teams in the League of Ireland. But statement win, it wasn't followed up, you know. So Jamie McGonigal, he got his first goal in 13 appearances on Friday against Cork. His last time scoring was here in Tallaght in March. So, you know, this is potentially a pivotal fixture in the league. It's giving the teams an opportunity to ease fixture congestion as the European games loom, and that's so important for the standing of the league, for the finances of the teams involved. That's why Dundalk and Pats is on tonight as well, of course. But the two games in 3 days is a test for any squad. And, you know, Shamrock Rovers will be without their captain, Ronan Finn, Gary O'Neill, and Trevor Clark. And his injury is of most concern. I understand he's been with a specialist in London today, and he's going to be out for a couple of months at least. And Derry, you know, Michael Duffy, Cameron Dunigan, Patrick McElhenney, they're all likely to be missing tonight. Colm Whelan is out for the rest of the season. So unfortunate that they signed a proven goal scorer, certainly one with great potential, and to lose him for the season. They have brought a player in. He's come from the Scottish League, and Paul McMullen is his name, from Dundee. He's not eligible for tonight's game, though, I understand, but he will hopefully give a bit of firepower. And I think Derry will probably be looking to do more in the summer transfer window than Shamrock Rovers.
That's another thing as well with Tony mentions McGonagall, and that's another reason why I can't see them pushing Shamrock Rovers right till the end and winning it, is their centre forwards, and it's a similar situation with Bohemians. McGonagall, I think that was only his second goal scored in right, as Tony said, there's been such a gap since his earlier strike, and he was quite good last year, the same with Keane Kavanagh. Whereas you look at Shamrock Rovers, who've scored 46 goals, 22 of them have come from all their forwards. Gaffney has 7, Johnny Kenny has 7, sorry 4, Burke has 7, so the firepower they have, and they've goals from all over midfield as well, Shane. I just can't see it with Derry.
That goal difference of 26
already, that tells
scary.
you know, it's like ridiculous. There's Afolabi, who was brilliant for Bohemians, right, man of the match, unbelievable performance, it was only his third goal of the season, something similar with Bohemians, and I know they're hard to come by centre forwards, that's why they get the big bucks, if you like, but that's a problem for the ones chasing down Shamrock Rovers, that they don't have an out and out centre forward that might get them kind of 12-15 goals.
By the sounds of you two lads, this is pretty much all over. Rovers are going to beat Derry, but if Pats could beat Dundalk, Tony, they'll go by Derry, won't they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Pats have been very consistent, but Dundalk are looking for their fourth straight win. So this is a really, really interesting one. And, you know, again, we talked about it with Derry City. We talk about it with Dundalk as well, and the pitch. It's a pity, because a game with two form sides now, I'd love to see it played on grass. I really would. But Pat Hooban is back in form. He's become the all-time leading goal scorer. He got a brace on Friday, so he's got the all-time goal scoring record now for Dundalk. So how young Noah Lewis can handle him. He handled Sean Boyd well on Friday, but Pat Hooban, when he's on fire, he's a very, very difficult player to catch. So that's a fascinating game in prospect. The two games tonight are really good. Unfortunately, none of them on proper telly, but there you go.
I'm glad you said it, Tony. speaking of missing forwards, your friend Alan Colley, Kevin Doherty, will be pulling his hair out. Freddie Draper and Elijah Ahui going back to Lincoln City. Draper, 7 goals in his last 10 games, 2 assists, 17 chances created. We talk about strikers, you know, not becoming readily available. That's a massive blow for Drogheda.
Massive blow, Shane, yeah. They've been overachieving so far, and they actually could be higher up the table as well, and largely down to Draper and his goals, as you say. Don't be surprised if you see him back with Derry City or Shamrock Rovers as well, because by all accounts, a lot of people are sniffing around if Lincoln decide not to hold on to him, but I think they've been more than happy with his loan spell and the way he's been treated at Drogheda as well. But that's a massive blow to them, especially ones who were so kind of poorly resourced as well, the squad in Drogheda. So to get a couple of players on loan that have made such an impact as both of them, not just Freddie, it's a massive blow for Kevin.
Speaking of loans, though, as from a Dundalk point of view, Wasiri Williams has been important for them. He was on loan from Swansea, but I hear he's going to Partick Thistle on a 2-year deal. So, you know, the links with Irish and Scottish football continue, but he'll be a loss for Dundalk.
Well, speaking of people on the move, Tony, Robbie Keane is heading to Israel, Maccabi Tel Aviv, for his first managerial job.
Extraordinary, isn't it? Robbie Keane could be a movie, you know that? I mean, the places he's been, the people he's seen, and another one now to add to his itinerary. It's extraordinary. That one came completely out of left field. He was involved, of course, with Leeds United for their last 4 games, which, unfortunately, from their point of view, they didn't manage to maintain their Premier League status. Robbie was involved with Sam Allardyce there. He hasn't managed himself before as such. He was a player manager briefly in India. He was assistant to Mick McCarthy. He's been assistant at Middlesbrough. He's like a wealth of experience. If he hasn't learned from where he's been in the game, the players he's played with, the teams he's played in, and the things he's seen in the game. So you'd imagine that he'll have something to offer, all right. From an Irish point of view, unfortunately, that wasn't something he could offer Stephen Kenny. That was Stephen Kenny's decision at the time. And it left Robbie in a bit of limbo from an Irish point of view. And that left a bad taste in the mouth. Look, from my point of view, you know, Robbie had a contract. It wasn't his fault that it was done like that. And it was unfortunate that he couldn't do more for Irish football. But this is now an interesting development. If he does well in managing a team that consistently plays in European competition. They're in the Conference League this year. They've been in the Champions League. Well, then that'll bolster Robbie's reputation. And as further down the line, we're looking at, you know, future Ireland managers, well, maybe the name Robbie Keane will come into play. But Maccabi Tel Aviv, that maybe Robbie's just got a great agent. That has come out of the blue for me, out of left field. But it'll be very interesting to see the latest step on the Robbie Keane journey, and the movie might well be in the pipeline.
What advice did you give him, Alan?
I wish him well, Ruby, and I know from conversations with him that he was keen to get involved in management and just waiting on the right opportunity. Did I think Maccabi Tel Aviv would be the right opportunity? Not in a million years.
It didn't, you know, it wasn't brought up at the five-a-sides in Malahide,
No. They'll all be knocked on the head now, unfortunately. But I wish him well.
They'll be four versus five. Yeah.
did Alan actually say that he played five? Did he actually tell you?
Oh, Tony, sorry.
That was his weekly, Tony.
And Tony as well.
Tony's,
I thought that was a secret and I wasn't supposed to tell anyone.
No, Tony, you've missed the boat here. Alan once gave up a five-a-side with a host of Ireland internationals and League of Ireland players to come on the Game On. Such is the commitment. But on a serious note, like, it's, you know, it's a massive move. If I will say one connection possibly, and I could be putting two and two together or getting five, Robbie Keane, Middlesbrough assistant manager in 2023. Robbie Keane replaces former Middlesbrough boss Aitor Karanka, who left the club on Sunday.
But yeah, and they're a hugely successful club, obviously the most successful in Israel. I think it's 23 league titles. They finished third last year, so as Tony said, there's a good opportunity for success with this team, and where would that leave him then? You could view it as maybe a stepping stone, but I think he has to view it as go over there and stamp his authority on the thing and try and be successful. He is very passionate about the game. He wants to be involved in management. As I said, he's been in a couple of coaching roles, coaching positions, but he always wanted to kind of have his say in terms of being the manager, and this is the opportunity for him. Where it will lead to, we don't know, Shane, but you can only wish him well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Gentlemen, before we wrap up the football chat, I'm not sure if any of you had dealings with him in the past. Tony, perhaps you may have. The sad news today that Craig Brown, Scotland's longest serving manager in a reign that lasted from 1993 to 2001, has died at the age of 82. Brown, an Aberdeen director, was at the helm the last time Scotland made it to a World Cup finals, taking the team to France 25 years ago. And just reading the online tributes from former teammates, from players who played under him, and indeed clubs that he was associated with, it just glowing references all round, Tony.
Yeah, he just had a wonderful reputation in the game. A very warm man, passionate football person, very well regarded and respected. And I would have come across him a couple of times and just found him to be a gentleman, I have to say. And, you know, I have to say a lot of the Scottish people, despite the fiery nature of Alex Ferguson or Gordon Strachan, have always been very good and very welcoming to Irish people. I think they definitely feel that kindred spirit of a Celtic cousin, if you like. And, he was a very good man, and indeed may he rest in peace.
Absolutely. Well said, Alan Colley, I suppose, echoes those
100%
sentiments.
Yeah, you only hear good things about him. Long and distinguished career in the game as well, and it's very sad news, but may he rest in peace.
Absolutely. Our thoughts and prayers go out to his friends, families, and indeed former teammates. Alan Colley, thank you very much. Tony O'Donoghue, enjoy the sunshine in Tala. Hopefully it's a cracking game between the top two in the League of Ireland.
You're surely going to Tala, Alan.
I'm asked, absolutely. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I'm heading. Although I was going to give my view on Galway and Mayo and all the expert analysis. I was
we've got time, Alan, you know.
Very
I control the ads here.
Mind Mayo and Galway. What about Mayo Football Club? Under 15, 17 teams into the League of Ireland. That has to be a good thing.
Brilliant, Ruby. Yeah, again, just in terms of kind of building on the progress being made with the underage structures, to get a better geographical spread of teams around the country as well as what we want. So the introduction of Mayo into that, I think, is absolutely brilliant. Obviously, we've seen with Curry FC coming into the First Division, and now they're going to throw in a couple of teams underage as well. So yeah, again, it's more positive news about the league, and it's what we want.
Absolutely. Kerry FC also entering a female side for the first time at under 17 level next year. Alan, we'll let you make your way across to Tallaght Stadium. Tony, enjoy the match. Ruby, we're going to be chatting golf and indeed Gaelic football a little bit later on, so stick with us here on Game On 2FM.
Game On
Golf.
Now you're very welcome back to this evening's Game On with myself, Shane Dawson, and Ruby Walsh. Ruby, we're chatting at the top of the show about our sporting highlights and a busy weekend and whatnot, and we forgot to mention the golf.
We did, because we didn't get to our sporting highlights. We simply asked each other what kind of a weekend we had. We forgot about the sporting highlights. We were too busy listening to Alan Colley telling us he was at some gig that no one else was at.
See, this,
and we thought he was in Glastonbury.
When Shells lose, I don't want to mention sporting highlights, Ruby, because you just cut me.
Yeah, I went in deep. well, the weekend, yeah, I suppose, look, definitely you would have thought or you were hoping that the ladies' golf was going to be a highlight. Leona Maguire and Stephanie Meadows both in the final group in the PGA Championship. It didn't go Leona's way. Stephanie kept grinding. I suppose when she needed a, well, gave herself a chance at a birdie in 17 and needed an eagle in 18, she went for it. But look, it was a great performance from her to, I wouldn't say get her career back on track, but you know, she's had two good weekends now, and I'm glad to see her have a few more.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I suppose that I was wondering how the storm would affect them as well. Leona wasn't going too well. I thought that might be the perfect time to just kind of reset, but unfortunately it wasn't to be. But still, a really, really good ending. And Ruby, we had the pleasure of a little bit earlier on this evening of chatting to one of those golfers that we mentioned, Stephanie Meadows. She was in the airport, actually, as she waited to leave New Jersey to return to Phoenix. And she kindly took the time to chat to myself and Ruby.
Game on.
Golf. Listen, let's just dive straight in. What a weekend. Third place finish, just two shots off the eventual winner. How do you reflect on the weekend overall, I suppose?
Yeah, I mean, fantastic week for me. I played great last week as well, so it was kind of nice to keep that momentum going. And, you know, I put myself in the last group of a major on a Sunday, so you can't ask for much more than that. You know, obviously 18, I gave myself somewhat of a chance, so it was nice to birdie 17 and have that chance coming down 18. But overall, great week, great tournament.
Are you proud of yourself for taking that chance on 18, at least having a go at it, anyway?
Yeah, I'll be honest, like I was actually pretty upset after 18, after I did that, because I feel like it's pretty unlike me. I can't remember the last time I've ever done that, but, you know, so, but it happens, right? Pressure's on. I had 230 front, like 228 front. I had to absolutely nook it. And but I got
you're
favor.
Human too. Everyone tries too hard at times.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I got lucky, thankfully, you know, but I was proud of myself. It would have been really easy to kind of melt down after that point. But, you know, I was able to still hit a pitching wedge up there to give myself a chance for birdie. So, you know, I'm proud of myself for not freaking out too much.
Just on that, what was going through your head even after you teed off on 18?
Yeah, I mean, I could see the group in front of us. They were on the green, and I heard a big roar when we were standing waiting to hit our second shot. So I had an idea. I couldn't tell which player was which, but I had an idea that she had probably made birdie to go to eight. So I knew I needed eagle, and I guess, you know, it was all on the line, and I knew that. I mean, it was a really tough. I had been 30 yards closer or 20 yards closer, then it would have been a big, big difference. But it was kind of a long shot, but, you know, a major, and then I went for it, and that's all I can do.
Yeah, I know you say if you're a couple of yards closer, or maybe it might have been a bit easier, but you're still standing there. I know it's a major, but it was going to be the biggest payday of your career. That didn't cross your mind, that if I don't get this right, this could be costing me a lot of money. That doesn't appear to have entered your head to me.
You know what? Yesterday I was actually really composed. And I think, you know, I've been out here a long time and there's so much more. Yes, the money is fantastic, but, you know, playing for a major with Leona in the final group, like trying to get my first win, trying to, you know, get a first major championship from Ireland. There were so many other things, and sure, the money crossed the mind, but I mean, to me, I was kind of, you know, it's your legacy, right? And I don't know how much longer, you know, or how many more chances I'll get to play. So, you know, I'm still planning on playing for many years to come, but you just never know, right? So I've been out here a long time. So I was just trying to leave something behind that was great.
In the interview on Friday where you said golf is what I do, it's not what I am. Mm-hmm. And to me, you backed that up with your actions yesterday by going for that eagle on 18.
Yeah.
Lots of sports people say things that they don't back up. You did back it up. That's demonstrating.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I think that's something I've realized a lot this year. It's been up until, you know, 2 weeks ago, it had been a really rough year for me. And, you know, it's really hard. Like, it's hard when you're not playing good golf and it's your career. And, but I just kept telling myself, you know, I have other things in life that I want to do. I have a family and, you know, all these other things. And I think, you know, it made a big difference mentality wise on the weekend. But, you know, it's true. We are people. We're not just golfers. And that goes for men and women.
You mentioned that kind of support you have. I know you got married a couple of months ago, and you've spoken about that, the kind of family you have and everything. How important is that support network, I suppose, when you want to be in contention at the top end of these competitions?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, I can't tell you how many videos I got yesterday of people watching, you know, from home there, from my golf club that I practice at in Phoenix. You know, mom was watching, obviously, in-laws were watching, the Hits grandparents were watching, you know, it's an ongoing list of support. And, you know, I feel it. And I think Leona's the same. We've mentioned that, you know, Irish fans are the best fans. Like anytime there's a tournament at home, there's, you know, way more people than come out here. So, you know, it's fantastic.
You mentioned fans watching on from home. Listeners will notice the American twang, yeah, that's sort of in with that Antrim accent. You're an American now, just
18 years.
Okay. Do you get home to Ireland much?
Yeah, I'm back 3 or 4 times a year. We play the event at Galgorm, and now that I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to play the Irish Open at Dromore just because of how I was playing this year, and I thought I had to stick on LPGA, so I'm going to reevaluate schedule now that things have changed a bit, and hope to come back for that as well.
It'd be great if you did come back from that, and be great if Leona was there as well. But look, yourself and Leona have played against each other, been friends for years, you know each other your whole careers, you've roomed together, played everything there is together. So when you're playing that final round yesterday and you're hanging in there in or around par and things aren't going great for her, is it hard to stay in your own game?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, we're both very competitive people, but we spend a lot of time together, and it was, you know, it was hard to see that yesterday because I know how much pressure was on, and obviously everybody wants to win, you know, and yesterday just wasn't her day, and but, you know, at the end of it, golf's done and we're back to being friends again. So, you know, we both looked at each other yesterday and we knew, we didn't have to say anything. We knew that it wasn't what we wanted, but you know, life goes on, and I'm sure she'll be back to compete in the next major in a very short time. I mean, she's a very consistent player and a great player.
Well, that's what golf is. Golf does move on. It's the 6th of July to the US Open. Are you looking forward to that?
Yeah. The ironic part of it is I'm not sure I'm going to get in.
Oh, you'd have to get in after yesterday. Surely that gets you in.
Yeah, it's only the only option left, because all the other entries have closed, is Rolex ranking. So I need to see this morning, it's actually probably out now, but need to see this morning what that bumps me up to. I don't know if it'll be enough or not, so we'll see.
We'll Google it for you and see if you're
Google it, sure. I think it either comes out at 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. our time, so I'm not sure, so it might be up. Yeah.
What is click?
I'm afraid as of now they're not just out yet. It must be another hour. We can't break
another hour. Okay.
but by the time we're on air, Ruby, so just to let right our let our listeners into the secret that this is a pre-record, that, you know, you're about to board a plane, Stephanie, but by 6 p.m. this evening Irish time, we'll have that good news for you. But,
fingers crossed.
On that note, I suppose, Stephanie, like, how much belief does this result kind of give you? Because overall, it's probably not the season you would have wanted. Then, a couple of weeks ago, you have a great finish, and then obviously this unbelievable finish just this weekend now. So, like, going forward, has your mindset changed at all, or has that kind of belief always been there?
No, I mean, 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, it was really hard to believe because I just wasn't hitting it good. I couldn't find a kind of thought or feeling on the golf course that was kind of working. So I felt a bit scrambled, if that makes sense. So I guess now the biggest difference is I feel much more clear, you know, and to see it under pressure doesn't mean that's how it's going to always work. But, you know, I found something with my coach that seems to work under pressure. So and just to see the ball going in the right area is a good feeling for anybody. So, a lot of confidence moving forward. I've always been a great putter, and I've been struggling with my iron play this year. So to see that kind of get a lot better this week gives me a lot of hope for, you know, the upcoming months. Just, you know, with my swing, we've been kind of trying to do the same thing, you know, just getting less stuck on the way down, and we've been trying to go cycle through different thoughts to see what works best under tournament mode. And I just kind of got a downswing feeling that really very simple, but it was very effective. And, you know, know, it's amazing. My coach flew out from Phoenix yesterday to Murich on a red eye flight on Saturday night to get there Sunday to watch. So, you know, it's great to have a team like that. Not many people in the world, you know, will jump on a plane and fly across the country and come watch you. So, and his other player, Mina, she was in the third to last group. So, you know, it's great to have that. You know, that gives me a lot of confidence too. Obviously, he believes in me, and everybody else believes in me as well.
Is this a career changing weekend? Because, like, even looking back at your journey, I mean, you're 31 years of age now. Mm-hmm. Given everything you've had to overcome, the back issues, like losing your father even at a young age in your rookie year, and I think it was, 2019 and 21, you really had to kind of finish with basically the last putt to even keep your card now. So, like, when mm-hmm. you reflect on all that and you see what you can achieve, and we talk about the belief and the support system, like, what will this do for you and for your career?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, it's hard to go with such a, it's, you know, I finished third my first event out, and then it was like downhill for there for a little bit. But, you know, I'm a very different person now. I was very young then. I hadn't experienced pro golf. Now I'm, you know, veteran. I'm considered old on the LPGA tour. So, you know, I think it is, I don't want to say it's career changing, because I feel like, you know, you have to back it up and keep going. Which, you know, I guess that's just sort of my personality. I would say that's Leona as well, right? Like, we just keep, everybody wants the next best thing. You want to do better. You want to win. You want to keep competing. But, you know, financially, obviously, huge paycheck this week. KPMG put a lot of money into the purse. And that obviously gives you some security. And it gives me the opportunity to kind of play free for the rest of the year, which is not an opportunity I've had too many times. Last year, you know, I had a good year. So I kind of had that. But this year, definitely, you know, it gives me that, you know, just go for it, see what I can do.
The roller coaster of sport, which is far more down than it's ever going to be up. What would you think it's taught you in the last 9 years?
Yeah, there's been a lot of downs. I mean, 1 month ago, I was, you know, crying to my husband about what, you know, how am I going to get better, or what am I doing, you know, what am I doing with my life, sort of thing. But that's just sport, right? Like, that's how hard it is, and that's how much we care. Like, it'll destroy you in a second if you let it. And there are those moments where it's tough for everybody. But I think, you know, perseverance, there's nothing greater than, you know, my husband always says, oh, you're only one shot away. And it might be the worst quote on the planet that I hate when he says it, but he's right. You know, you get that one thought, you hit one great shot, and then you're off, right? You get the confidence and something clicks, and that's how golf is. And as hard as it is to hear when you're in the downs, like, it's reality. And that's kind of happened in the last 2 weeks. So you just got to keep going and never give up.
Perseverance. There's the advice, Shane Dawson. Mm-hmm. Perseverance.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, listen, we're the same age, Stephanie, so I don't know, but if I take up golf now, who knows?
You never
know. I might be off. It doesn't matter how much perseverance I have, Ruby. I don't know about that now, but...
I'd say it's advice in life, so I would.
No, absolutely. No, on a genuine note, kind of just before we do finish up that chat, kind of that mental resolve, really. Like, I'm always astounded when I talk to any top athlete in whatever the sport is to have that. Like, do you focus much on sports psychology and that side of things?
Yeah, definitely. I work with a lady called Debbie Cruz, sports psych for 3 or 4 years now. But she's amazing. You know, she's, I wouldn't say a traditional sports psych. You know, she's a bit more, you know, traditional golf and sports psych is keep calm and, you know, kind of go about your process and all the rest of it and don't think about the results. I'm a little bit different. You know, I like to look at leaderboards. Every other sport in the world, you look at the leaderboard and you know the score. So why shouldn't you? you know, we've kind of overcome, I think it's motivating, and I tend to perform better when, as much as I hate being under the gun sometimes and my back's against the walls, unfortunately, that's when I perform my best. So, you know, sometimes I have to kind of recreate that situation for myself, even when my back's not against the wall. So, but it's a fun way to play golf. And, you know, it's such an important part of the game on and off the golf course. You have to be happy off the golf course before you can even think about making birdies on. So there's a lot of balancing going on.
It's incredible. I think it's a great philosophy.
Yeah.
Backs to the wall, stand up and fight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, well, on that note, Stephanie Meadow, I believe you have a plane to catch, a flight to catch. Yes. So we yeah.
5 hours home, and hopefully yeah. I'm after re-clicking the Rolex here, but it definitely hasn't moved the last 2 minutes.
It hasn't. So. Okay, it might
hopefully
be 10
that'll
o'clock.
Be good news when it does.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Fingers
crossed. By the time you land, Steph, you'll be competing in the US Open.
Yeah, exactly. I might be purchasing Wi-Fi on plane.
Yeah. Well, listen, with the prize packet, no brother, get the premium stuff.
I'll be fine, yeah.
Listen, Stephanie Meadow, thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Game on.
Golf.
So, Ruby, you were
scrying.
You are scrambling to Google. Unfortunately, the rankings are in. They came in about an hour after we stopped the chat with Stephanie, and she is 89th, which is, I think, just outside the US Open. However,
14 outside, was it?
Yeah. But the good news is 62 places she's jumped up from that finish.
Yeah, she was saying that when we were finished the call.
Yeah.
That if she had been in the position she's in now on the 1st of June when the entries closed, it probably would have gotten her in with the exemptions other players would have. So
who knows? There might be something.
You never know.
Because it would be unfortunate. But listen, to jump 62 places in any sport, in any rankings, is some achievement. So
In one weekend.
Amazing. Amazing. Brilliant stuff. So we definitely appreciate Stephanie taking the time to chat in the airport. The background noise there was the Phoenix airport, so it was. So very well done to Stephanie Meadow, and very best luck to Leona Maguire, who will be competing in the US Open and looking for another competition where she's thereabouts come Sunday evening. Ruby, we're going to take a short break, and afterwards Neil Ewing will be chatting to us to chat Gaelic football. So lots more to come here on Game On 2FM.
RTE
2FM.
Game On.
Gaelic football.
Welcome back to Game On, and we are going to go to Gaelic football. We will have hurling tomorrow evening with Niall Moran, just in case you think we were overlooking it, but with four games and the draws, we are keeping to the football this evening. That is not an intentional discrimination against hurling. We do not favour either in this show, Shane Dawson, do we?
Absolutely not. I do not want to bear the wrath of the hurling Twitterati, so no. We will be covering hurling in detail with Niall Moran, but this evening we'll be chatting football with Neil Ewing, who's on the line. Neil, how are you, sir?
Hey, Shane, how are things? Hey, Ruby, how are you?
Good, Neil.
Good call, I think. You don't want those guys with the sticks chasing after you.
No, you absolutely don't.
You definitely need to stay neutral in that one, aren't you? Or maybe even side with them a little bit. Yeah, where do we start? I'm a Kildare man. I'm starting with Glenn Ryan. I'm starting with that referee. What was he at?
What was Glenn Ryan not giving out about the referee?
Not at all, a leading question for you there, Neil.
I'm backing up Glenn Ryan.
Yeah.
Maybe white to the core.
Listen, Ruby, I think we'd all love to see Kildare making a step back towards where they should be, but, making excuses like blaming the ref after a defeat like that, I don't think does Glenn Ryan or Kildare any favours. Even the players, I think, they did have opportunities during the game to win it. And, you have to allow for some human error in a game with 33 people maybe making crucial decisions at any time in the game. The players make lots of mistakes. The referee's going to make mistakes. So, I think maybe Glenn Ryan should keep the focus a little bit more internal. And maybe if he wants to give out about the referee, do it when he's having coffee with his mates on Sunday morning. But, no need to be doing about it or giving out about him on TV afterwards. I don't know.
It was probably not taking goal scoring opportunities that ultimately resulted in Kildare not going through.
Yeah, Derek Irwin's chance, especially there in the second half. I know they had a number of opportunities. Neil Flynn had one, Rory Began made a good save, but Derek Irwin's just the time that it came in the second half, he hit the crossbar, and it probably would have sealed the game for Kildare at that stage. Yeah, put them into a lead that they might have been able to hold on, the sort of game that it was, and that's how fine the margins are. And it just shows the importance that we've probably seen it across a few of the games at the weekend. Goals can one way or another just decide a game, obviously.
I know Conor McCarthy was the hero for Monaghan, got the goal, got the winning point laid on, but bigger picture for Monaghan, have they stumbled across the right man finally in Vinnie Corey? Like, I know they were sniffing around Jer Brennan, Jason Sherlock at the start of the year.
Yeah, you know, Vinnie Corey, and I know his brother Martin, who works along him. You know, the two of them have got a lot of praise the last few weeks for how they've set Monaghan up. You know, it's been brilliant. You know, during the league, they struggled a little bit. They did their usual feat then of pulling it off on the last day to save themselves from relegation. The biggest problem for Monaghan, I think, is the big boots that Malachy O'Rourke, who was managing them for a number of years, left to fill. You know, it was going to be very, very difficult for anybody to come in after that. But yeah, you have to be hugely you have to hugely admire what Vinnie Corey has done since he came in, because they're a team. It is a cliche, but Monaghan fit the bill of a team in transition. You know, they had a few Ulster Championship wins. That team is largely moving on. But, you know, the Monaghan win against Kildare on Saturday was brilliant in Tullamore. But in the curtain raiser, their minors got to a first All-Ireland final in a long number of decades, which is, you know, for a county with that sort of a playing population, is brilliant. So, you know, you can only have admiration for how they've developed Gaelic football in Monaghan, and they're an example to all other counties of similar, if not bigger, size. And you know, maybe Kildare are an example of a bigger county that could learn from the likes of Monaghan.
Well, the youth are the future, and speaking of the future, next Saturday night at 6:30, Monaghan will face Armagh in one of the quarterfinals. A daunting task for them, or the best draw they could have hoped for?
I think for both teams, it's the draw that they probably would have wanted. It's the most winnable draw probably for all of them, if they're honest. And they've both had quarterfinal heartbreak in Croke Park over the last decade or so. So this is a great opportunity for one of them to push on and get to a semi-final. Monaghan, of course, did have a semi-final heartbreak versus Tyrone a number of years ago, so they'll probably be just hoping that Tyrone are beaten in the first game, so they don't have any possibility of playing them in Croke Park. But yeah, no, I think it's a great draw for both Armagh and Monaghan. Great opportunity for two teams to probably push on to a semi-final that is probably approaching bonus territory for both of them. You know, Armagh would have been very disappointed to miss out in the semi-final last year with the penalty shootout defeat. Obviously didn't win an Ulster title this year, but that performance against Galway in Carrigan-Shannon in the last round of the round robin has transformed their season. And if you told them back in January that they'd be playing Monaghan in an All-Ireland quarter-final, they would have bitten your hand off for it.
It's a massive opportunity for Kieran McGeaney and Armagh to get into a semi-final. We will be previewing those in due course, but let's stick with the review. Ruby mentioned Armagh Monaghan is Saturday evening at 3:45 on Saturday. It is Kerry versus Tyrone. Tyrone are there because they defeated Donegal 118 to 13 points. Aidan O'Rourke has since stepped down as Donegal manager. Like, what do you learn or what do you take from that Tyrone victory? Yeah, like, it wasn't the greatest of matches.
No, Tyrone were very impressive, but I think Tyrone are just a step ahead of where Donegal are at the minute. Donegal getting to a preliminary quarter final, you know, again, we mightn't have said it a few years ago, but that is a successful season for Donegal, given where they came from. Their league was as close to shambolic as you'll get for a Division 1 team. You know, to lose a manager in acrimonious circumstances during it, a lot of outside noise around stuff that's happening in football in the county outside of the senior team, you know, players mentioned in the media as having had discussions with management around their future. And to be honest with you, I think the Donegal players deserve a lot of credit for, you know, how they stood up over the last number of weeks and months to transform their season from relegation and a disappointing Ulster exit. They would have taken a lot of flack. You know, bear in mind that, you know, these guys are trying to step into the shoes of All-Ireland winners. Very, very difficult thing to do. Expectations very high in the county, and, you know, the league campaign fell well below that. A bit of apathy even among Donegal supporters, and I think those older players who took a lot of criticism earlier in the year really dug in, turned it around, got to a preliminary quarter final, but it was probably just a step ahead of where they are at this stage of their life cycle. Tyrone, on the other hand, a level above Donegal, but how far above, that varies from week to week with Tyrone, and that's the funny thing at the minute. You know, they have some outstanding players, but are they good enough to win in All-Ireland? Personally, I just don't see it myself at the minute. I was in Breffni Park last week, and I seen Derek Hanlon playing against Westmeath, and I left there saying, if Derek Canavan doesn't win an All-Star this year, there's going to be some unbelievable attacking performances. I think he only added to that last weekend versus Donegal. He just reminds me of somebody playing bowling with the shutters up down the side to stop the ball going into the gutter. He just bounces off every side of the gutter on the way down, and it's a strike at the end. You know, really, really enjoyable player to watch. But yeah, they're going into a huge test now versus Kerry this weekend in Croke Park. And I think even with the brilliant form of Colin Kilpatrick, I think his score that he got against Donegal the other night was another one worth watching back. He was like a steam train coming through. It was just, it was really enjoyable stuff. But even with the form of Colin Kilpatrick, Conor Miner, Derek Canavan, I don't know if they have enough of a spread of quality to take Kerry this weekend.
Well, it will be interesting to see how that one plays out. On Sunday, the quarterfinal pairings are Derry Cork 1:45, Dublin Mayo 4 p.m. Two mouth-watering ties live on RT Television. Mayo defeated Galway 110-12. The manner of victory, I suppose, has to be talked about for Mayo, how they grinded it out.
Yeah, definitely. And grinding it out, you know, that describes it perfectly. And anytime you go to Salt Hill, you're going to have to grind something out. And it's such a frustrating place to play games. You know, it's frustrating for supporters to try and get there with traffic. You know, what, yesterday was the 25th of June, and all anybody is talking about there is the weather conditions, which, you know, for such a beautiful pitch, its location does nothing for it. And I've seen over the last number of weeks that they're actually planning to put floodlights there. Floodlights imply more winter games in worse conditions, so I struggle to see the logic with that one. But yeah, Mayo deserve a huge amount of credit for yesterday. I think Mayo's biggest problem over the last few years, and there's been touches of it this year, is their own supporters. I think after every game they win, they've won the All-Ireland, and after every game that they, you know, if it's a draw, if it's a middle of the road performance, they're one of the worst teams in the country. And, you know, the reality is neither. They're, you know, they're in the top five teams in the country. They're capable of winning All-Ireland, you know, particularly if the draw goes right for them. They have a huge amount of quality. They're a really good team, and they probably just need their supporters to have a little bit more patience with them and be a little bit more level-headed. And I think we might even see that reflect in their performances on the pitch. But, yeah, they have, what, 7 days now to get ready for Dublin in Croke Park. So nothing will get the players and their own supporters more excited than that.
That will be exciting. And Kevin McStay seems to have fire in their bellies. Pádraic Joyce was a disappointed man leaving Salt Hill yesterday, but John Cleary was a happy man below in Cork. Cork beat Roscommon, and Davy Burke, the Roscommon side, just didn't take the goal chances they had.
Yeah, and you know, when we spoke about Monaghan and Kildare and the goal chances, this was the game I had in mind as well. And you know, you look at what Roscommon didn't get, and then you see Sean Powder's goal for Cork. You know, it barely just rolled over the line. It needed every little edge of power that on it to get over the line. Completely changed the game for Cork. You know, what was really encouraging for me from that game was to see the celebrations at the end. Again, probably similar to Donegal, those Cork players have taken a lot of criticism from their own supporters for an even longer period than the Donegal players have. And, you know, very difficult for them to keep coming back in a county which historically has such success. You know, it's a lot of travel involved even in playing for Cork, you know, to keep committing. Some of them maybe 90-minute journeys both to and from training. You know, delighted for some of those players and also for, you know, the strong football cohort from West Cork there as well. They've just been down for too long, and the game needs Cork strong. It needs Cork competing with Kerry for Munster Championships. It needs Cork competing with Dublin for All-Ireland, again, because of that large playing pool that they have. Roscommon, on the other hand, you know, it's funny for them. They've had a good season. I think they have made progress, but a week ago, it looked like been so much better of a season. You know, they were probably thinking, you know, could we sneak directly into a quarterfinal here on the scoring difference ahead of Dublin? If not, we'll definitely have a home draw in the preliminary quarterfinal in Hyde Park. Last Sunday evening, they ended up third in the group, waiting for a draw on Monday morning, then to go down to Cork, who were coming off a great win against Mayo. It was just a very difficult game. And, you know, we've seen again, to go back to the Monaghan and Kildare game here, Sean Jones pulled off, it might become a new trick in the GAA. He either thought he had won a mark or pretended he had won a mark. A few players seemed to stop and it opened up the space for Conor McCarthy to kick the winner for Monaghan. The flip side, Conor Daly, outstanding for Roscommon all season for the last number of years. Just slightly got caught in two minds, fouled the ball. Some refs may have led him away with it, and you know that turned out to be the turning of the game in injury time for Cork versus Roscommon the other day. So, you know, I think maybe we're too quick to write off a season based on one result. Roscommon, again, similar to Mayo, they're a better team than their supporters think they are when they're beaten, and they're maybe not as good as their supporters think they are after a decent win.
Yeah, I felt very sorry for him too. A simple mistake to make for Roscommon. But Neil Ewing, thanks a million for taking our call this evening. I have no doubt, the same as you, Cork will have to up it again to beat Derry next Sunday at 1:45 in Croke Park. Shane Dawson, thank you very much for your company this evening. Thanks to Roland Aller, our producer, Laura Lee Davis, our BCO. We're both back again tomorrow.
We are indeed. Better De Silva's up next after the news.
RTE 2FM.